Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
This episode is brought to you by the all-new FreshBooks, where you can create and send professional-looking invoices in about 30 seconds. You can get a free 30-day trial. Just go to freshbooks.com/RIP. And enter Rental Income Podcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
There are a ton of ways to finance rental properties. And if you want to grow your portfolio past a couple of rentals, commercial financing may be the way to help you get there. Now, it's called commercial financing, but these loans are actually made on residential real estate. So it's kind of a funny thing to call it a commercial loan when it's actually on residential real estate. But these are loans that banks make to just regular people, regular investors like us that want to buy rental properties. And there's banks out there, local community banks, and every town in this country has these local community banks that specialize in making real estate loans that don't go by the typical standards that you would find for your traditional Fannie and Freddie rental property loans. So I wanted to bring a commercial banker on today to talk about how this works, to talk about what the banks are looking for, and how we can take advantage of this to grow our portfolio. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds, and we'll meet Elliot Kultz. He is a banker with City National Bank in Stanton, Virginia.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
So, Elliot, there's big banks, the Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, and then there's smaller community banks. Can you tell me kind of what different banks specialize in and why real estate investors may be better off choosing a community bank?
Yes. One thing that is nice about a community bank is by being involved in the community, you know, they're more willing to want to deal with those locally. One reason that is because they are there to set to service the credit needs of the community as their charter states. With the larger banks, they're looking to really do larger transactions. You'll usually find them in large metros, and their commercial loan officers are looking for the deals that are in the $10 million plus. Anything underneath that really doesn't fit their credit culture. So with a community bank, someone who's looking to start a rental portfolio, it's a great place to go because their credit terms are not going to be any looser than a big bank, but they're willing to begin relationships with people because of their purpose for fulfilling the needs of their community.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the exciting part about community banks is that it seems like real estate investors and community banks are a good partnership because we're both kind of operating in the same space where if I go to, without picking on anybody, Bank of America or Chase or Wells Fargo, they're really looking for volume. They're looking for bigger deals where the community banks are not more hungry, but like they're more maybe set up, or maybe I'm a bigger fish to a community bank than I would be to Bank of America. Is that right? Am I thinking about this the right way?
No, you are thinking about it the correct way. Bank of America, the Chase, Wells Fargo, they deal with large, high net worth individuals, and they also deal with large corporations, real estate developments.
Right.
While the community banks are well positioned to help those, you know, whether it's just someone who's starting a small LLC or a partnership with a buddy, or they themselves are going about individually, because the transactions are smaller, they're able to provide more hands-on attention and be able to walk the customer through the lending process, because they're not chasing the big deals. They're looking for smaller loans, such as, you know, someone's trying to start a loan portfolio.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Now, where things get interesting are the different sides of the bank. So there's the retail side that's more consumer focused, and then there's the commercial side, which is more business focused. Can you explain to me the difference, if there's more to it, about the two different sides of the bank?
Yeah. So with the retail side, you're looking at, for being able to, where you purchase a vehicle, or you're looking for a home equity loan, or you're looking to, you go for a mortgage for purchase money to be able to buy a home, whether it's going to be your primary residence or a vacation home. In some instances, there are products to where they can offer be able to fulfill credit needs for people who are trying to start a credit portfolio for single family or one to four family dwellings. Where commercial comes in, it's really for people who are having who have more than just a small amount of loans. So they're looking to really ramp up the size of their portfolio, because they're able to be able to get credit usually a little quicker. And sometimes for people who are trying to take advantage of a deal, time is the importance of closing a real estate deal.
Now, there's some big differences between the loans that they offer for investors. So we're talking buying rental properties. And so you could as an investor get your loans through the retail side, or you could get your loans through the commercial side. And there's different trade-offs depending on which way you go, right?
That is correct, Dan. So I think a lot of people are familiar with the residential mortgage. If they go through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, it's more difficult to buy an investment property and put it through the secondary market guidelines. That's a little bit more rigid. Where if you go through the community bank, you're able to they're still underwriting guidelines, but they're not as strict for borrowers who are trying to buy, whether it's buy a property at foreclosure or already buy an existing property that's already cash flowing with rental. So if you're looking to purchase your first property, you could probably go through both of them. But if you're going to really, if you're looking for to be able to turn a deal quickly, I would recommend people go on the commercial side, especially once they get about five or more. It's usually banks want to put those products into the commercial side because of regulatory guidelines.
Okay. Now, what about LLCs? A lot of times people have trouble trying to get loans in an LLC. But on the commercial side, you guys kind of expect that, right? You're more maybe set up to loan under an LLC. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So whether you're choosing to do an S-Corp, a C-Corp, or an LLC, the commercial side is well positioned for that, and that's what they expect. So it is very, very difficult to try to get, if you're trying to start a business, whether it is a limited liability company, and go through the secondary market as opposed to a commercial bank that's going to hold the note themselves personally. So, and that is a perfect example of why you would want to, if you're looking to start a real estate holding company and keep all your properties underneath the holding company, then go through the commercial division of the bank.
Now, the trade-off, though, is that you're not, through commercial, you're not going to be able to get a 30-year fix generally, right? Like, aren't most of the commercial loans like 20 years or 25 years?
That is correct. You would probably going to have to get a shorter amortization schedule, so you're not going to be able to have as long by having a commercial note. Additionally, you're going to also have to personally guarantee the note, while on the other end, you know, if you're not able to make the payments and the bank forecloses on it, you just walk away from the property and there's no recourse. But on the commercial end, there is recourse where if the bank is not able to sell the property for what they owe on it, they reserve the right to come after your personal assets. So there is a little bit of a risk involved. So that's something to be for investors who are looking to get into. That's some of the pros and cons for them to weigh out. But usually the costs are a lot less. You know, so if someone who's trying to come out of pocket, there's a lot less closing costs usually for a commercial mortgage than there is for a secondary mortgage.
Really? Okay. Is it a pretty big difference between the two?
It's usually going to run – it's probably going to run about probably about 5% of your closing costs. So if you're looking to buy, let's say, a $100,000 home, then you're probably looking at about $5,000 difference.
Okay. Now, what about bundling properties together? So say I have five rental properties and I want to bundle them into one mortgage. Is that something that's possible with the commercial loans?
It is. And that's one reason why you would go through commercial. You couldn't do that through the alternative. So, and that, by being able to bundle those together, you would also be able to, what a lot of people like to do, whether it's try to get a cash out, so then they can take the equity out of those properties and then buy more properties.
Okay.
So, and that's a perfect example of why people want to go through their commercial dealer or commercial lender for that kind of transaction.
Some of the loan terms that I've seen, there's a balloon or maybe the rate adjusts after 5 years or 10 years. Are commercial loans the kind of thing where you're going to constantly need to refi every few years?
There are some loans, and I would encourage your listeners to, you know, shop around for banks that do offer fully amortizing commercial notes. For the bank that I work for, we do offer fully amortizing commercial notes for 1 to 4 family dwellings. So that way it saves borrowers the cost and the headache of having to refinance every, you know, so often for a balloon maturity.
And so your rate is going to change. Like, so your rate might be locked in for 5 years, but after 5 years, it may change on a commercial loan, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. So if it's a 5-year fix with a balloon, then when you refinance, it's whatever the market rate is at that time. If you do an adjustable rate mortgage, so then it will readjust based on whatever the index is, and that's written in the note. You're right. You are susceptible to rate changes. But generally, banks put in caps on those notes to kind of quell any concerns that borrowers may have about seeing a spike in interest rates. So they'll usually put 2% caps or 3% caps on adjustments, so that way it doesn't scare off borrowers.
Coming up on the Rental Income Podcast.
I want to talk to Elliot about what exactly the banks are looking for with commercial loans. Are they looking at your personal income and credit and your debt to income ratio, or are they more concerned with the deal? So we're going to get into that in just a second, but first I want to take a quick second and thank our sponsor today, FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks has been totally redesigned and custom built for the way that you work as a real estate investor. A couple of the features that I just love with FreshBooks is how easy it is to create and send invoices to my tenants. It takes literally 30 seconds to send out an invoice, and it's a great gentle way to remind a tenant that the rent is coming due. There's no formatting, there's no formulas. It's just real simple, clean, and professional looking. The other thing that I love is that there's no more waiting for checks to come in the mail. With literally 2 clicks, you can set yourself up to receive online payments. And then I also love their app. I can easily track my income and expenses. And when tax time comes, all I have to do is send a report over to my CPA and I'm done. No more worries, no more headaches with tax time. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to my listeners. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/RIP and enter Rental Income Podcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/RIP and enter Rental Income Podcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, let's get back to the interview. So, Elliot, tell me, what exactly are the banks looking for when they're deciding if they're going to make a loan or not?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say, especially with community banks, if you have an existing relationship with the bank, whether it's where your deposits already rest, or if you already have some small credit relationship, whether it's through a credit card or a car loan, then we want to be able to see if you've been able to not just what your FICO credit score is, but also because we're trying to develop a relationship, you know, what existing relationship do you have? So if you do have deposits or other products with the bank, you know, the bank is more eager to try to work with you, especially if it's a marginal credit, you know, where it could kind of go both ways. But as far as our guidelines, criteria, you know, we look for loan to value. So banks for 1-4 family dwelling are probably going to lend right around 80% for the value of the property. So the appraised value of a property is $100,000. Banks will probably go up to $80,000 for a loan.
Okay, so you need a $20,000 down payment in that example.
Yeah, right, yeah, 20,000, 20%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then what about debt to income? Like, how does that work? Like, what are you looking for there?
So banks want to make sure that the person or people who are applying for credit aren't overly extended in their personal lives, because people are going to pay for their personal mortgage first or any other debts before they pay a commercial note. Mm-hmm. So they want to make sure that you're not using all the funds from your net operating income from those rental properties just to you know, create more of a financial distress. So banks are going to look for usually what we like to see is a 45% debt to income. So they'll take your monthly debts and divide it by your monthly income, and that creates your debt to income ratio.
Okay. Now, I've always heard that with commercial loans, they're more concerned about the deal than the borrower. Is that true? It sounds like you're really looking for a strong borrower, but are you also taking the deal into consideration?
That's really by each institution. Some people want to, in their bank's credit culture, I would say that for smaller banks, they can feel more comfortable with a strong deal, but that rests within the credit culture of each bank. So with our bank, we certainly also want the borrowers to be to pass the litmus test.
Right. Okay. And what kind of reserves do you want to see from a borrower?
Now, that's important. So banks want to be able to see that you have about a month and a half of payment reserves for each mortgage that you have. So if you have one mortgage for one property, about a month and a half payment, because they want to be able to see that you have the ability to, if there is a vacancy, or money will come out of that reserve, as well as anticipated, updated cost for repairs and maintenance that come with any property. Mm-hmm. And so be able to see that's going to be come out of your reserves as opposed to put on credit to fill in that short-term period.
Okay. So if I have 10 properties, they all rent for $1,000 a month, you guys want to see $10,000, $15,000 in reserves somewhere around there, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Perfect. Okay. Now let's talk about another metric that a lot of commercial lenders use, the debt service coverage ratio. That I think confuses a lot of people. Do you have a quick and easy way to explain what that is?
Yeah, the simplest way is to describe it and boil it down in the simplest form is if you take your monthly mortgage payment plus including your insurance and taxes, what that payment is, you want to multiply it by 1.3, and that would get you a 1.3 debt service coverage. So if your monthly mortgage payment with tax and insurance is $1,000, then look for renting that property out for $1,300. And the reason why banks want to see that, because they want to be able to know first that the property is cash flowing positive. So it's actually an investment. It's not a cash dump. Secondly, they want to be able to see that you have a cushion there. So when things do go wrong with the home, you'll be able to use the reserves that property creates, the income that it creates, to do the maintenance and repairs.
Okay. Now, tell me, if I was going to try to engage with you, I want to be a customer of you and your bank. What's the best way for someone to do that? Is it data-driven where you want me to fill out an application and you're going to look at it, or would I want to come in there and sit down with you and meet you face-to-face and try to develop a relationship with you? Like, what kind of advice could you give me and the listeners?
Due to regulations, there is a point that is data-driven. So we do have to make sure that we be able to collect financials and a credit application, personal financial statement, because when our regulators come behind us, they want to make sure that we underwrote the risk fairly. However, there is a great deal of intangibleness that could be weighted based on a person's reputation in the community. If you come in, there's a great deal of just being able to sit across from them, a banker, and explain to them, you know, what you're looking to accomplish, whether you're just getting into the industry or you're a seasoned investor who has many properties in their portfolio. But bankers want to be able to expand their customer base. So there's a great deal of value to actually meet with your banker and allow them to see what your story is, both with your previous profession as well as what your goals and ambitions are for the future.
Okay. I know an investor that put together a book. He owns a bunch of properties, and he has a little book that has pictures of his properties and information on what he purchased it for, what the rental history has been, how much he rents the property out for. Is something like that helpful to you as a banker, or is that maybe just a little bit of overkill?
No, it's extremely helpful. The more information that we have, the better we can position you for approval for your loan.
Okay.
Because, you know, when bankers look at it and they got to take the request to a credit analyst, the analyst, you know, their job is to look at all the reasons why we shouldn't make the loan. And the loan officer is to be fair and balanced, tries to point all the reasons why we should make the loan with hope that the truth will be found in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So by showing that, you know, if a customer showed that they lost $1,000 on the property over the course of the year, so it did not have a positive cash flow, but they've got pictures of showing all the improvements that they made to the property justifying the loss, you know, those little things create great value for a borrower to be able to, if it's not a slam dunk deal, to get the benefit of the doubt.
Okay. Now, what about if you had something big happen? Like maybe you had to put a new roof on a property. So it's a property that maybe has been profitable, but you had a big expense. So on paper, it doesn't maybe look like a good investment. Is there a way to maybe get around that, or for the bank to make an exception, or are banks generally going to look at that and maybe not think as highly as that property?
No, I mean, all properties have general wear and tear, so it is understood that large upgrades are going to have to be made. So in a case like that, obviously show be able to document the improvements that were made to the property, such as what the reference you made to the gentleman who had the book and pictures and keeping receipts. Additionally, you know, banks will usually ask for the past 3 years, so that way if you have one off year, you know, you can show the other 2 years that justify how the property is an income producing property.
Okay. Is there any advice you can give for maybe someone that's newer, or maybe someone that's going to take their portfolio to the next level, and maybe they're a little bit scared to take on leverage and take on more debt? Is there any advice that you would give them as a banker and as someone that's seen a lot of investors? Like, is there anything that, like, maybe makes people more successful taking on leverage, and something else that maybe is a red flag?
So I deal with a lot of investors, and, you know, there are some properties that are more successful than others, but I've never come across investors who have become financially distressed who put quite a bit of equity infusion into the home. So if they're able to bring a lot of cash into the home and not have to leverage the property to the hills, so even they'll be able to have a lower principal and interest payment as a result. Therefore, if they do go a month or two without tenants, it doesn't ruin them. And mm-hmm. And because they haven't leveraged their other properties, they can weather those storms better. So I would definitely say you want to be able to grow, but grow with caution. Don't just take out a bunch of debt if you've never done it for the first time and want to buy five properties in the first year, I would recommend a more of a methodical approach. And if you can't go wrong by putting in a large piece of down payment, because you're going to be able to charge less rent because the bank's going to be charging you, and therefore you're more likely to be able to find a tenant because you're below market as far as the rent that you're having to charge.
Okay. So the bigger down payment, the safer the deal is, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
A way to look at it.
Even if you can't find a tenant, if worse comes worse, if you just have to sell a property, then you're more likely to be able to get your lease, recoup what you owe to the bank because you put such a large amount down.
Awesome. Well, Elliot, if someone wants to reach out to you, if they're looking for a banker, why don't you tell us how someone can reach out to you and what areas your bank lends in?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. So my office is in Stanton, Virginia, in the Shenandoah Valley, and I personally can help customers all over the state of Virginia. But so I work for City National Bank of West Virginia. We're headquartered out of Charleston, West Virginia. And my number, my email, is Elliot, Elliott, dot KULZ at bankatcity.com.
Awesome. And I will go ahead and put a link to that in case you missed it on our show notes page. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode126. Elliot, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate your time.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I'm Andrea, founder of a boutique handbag brand, Andy, and this is why I switched to Shopify. I tried three other platforms prior to Shopify, and I remember my breaking point was when I would try to make one little change and my entire site would go down. Shopify made it really easy for me to shift everything over and hit the ground running. I was able to migrate my products and all of my customer information over.
Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Go to shopify.com/listen to take your business to the next level today.